You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Go Wild. Go Wild is the fastest growing social media application for outdoor enthusiasts, and it's designed by outdoor enthusiasts. If you want more information, visit Google Play Store and download the app, or visit timetogowild.com. Let's get outside. It's time to go wild.
When it comes to hunting in comfort, I can't think of a better way than hunting out of a redneck blind.
You know, it's something about a man. You want to be this rough, tough, just adventurous, I'm going to hunt in any condition kind of guy. We've all been there, but it's super nice being tucked away in a redneck blind, whether it be hay bale blind, soft side blind, fiberglass blind, that allows you just to hunt longer in tough conditions.
That's right. And sometimes when you have a limited time, you want to make sure that when you have the day to hunt, you can spend as many hours out there as possible. What better way than have a redneck blind? Keeps you out of the elements and comfortable. Plus, the another advantage of the fiberglass blind is put them in those situations where the wind might be too light and variable or too swirly, and you can put a fiberglass blind in the Big Buck Palace, lock up all the windows, and sit in there and be scent-proof, scent-free, and still be in the game.
Great time to take out a kid or a dad, older people, tuck them away in these things, get them out of those, you know, tough conditions, and enjoy a hunt for longer periods of time.
That's
right. Check them out at redneckblinds.com.
Welcome to the Hunting Strategy Podcast this week. This is Matt Dye, and Adam is back in Missouri holding down the fort. I am traveling to Ohio, Maryland, Virginia to visit family, and then stay there for a couple days, and then make our way to Tennessee for a property consultation. And then down to Arkansas to hunt with the Stratton boys. So long roundabout trip, but part of the trip includes a stop here in Ohio and working with a client. And I have to do a podcast. I feel obligated to do a podcast with him. His name is Todd, and he's here with me today. But I don't know if I've ever heard a story quite like the story that he has to share that's taken place over 16, 17 years. And I want everyone to listen with an open mind and understand the perspective that he's going to share on the podcast. Because the story comes 100% full circle. But it's so unique that I think that there's different portions of the story that everyone really is honestly going to be able to relate to. And I encourage you to think of how, you know, how it resonates with you. So without further ado, Todd, welcome to the podcast.
You scared everybody when you said, now keep an open mind. You scared me.
Well, it was funny. Actually, another client from Ohio, he texted me the other day, and he said, oh, and it made me chuckle. He said, I feel like I need to wear steel-toe boots listening to the podcast because I'm going to get my toes stepped on so much. It was a Habitat podcast, and it made me chuckle. But I do think that, because again, this whole story is, is such a cool perspective on a evolving situation that really was takes place through a long,
really
over
two decades.
Yeah, almost two decades. Just evolving you as a person and as a hunter and as a habitat manager. That you know, there's probably someone else out there who's been through something similar. I don't know them. I haven't met them, but again, there's a portion that I'm sure every listener, you know, throughout this two-decade period is going to be able to relate to you.
Yeah.
So set the stage on the whole story. We've talked about it multiple times, and I ask questions. I've done it, you know, a few times about it, but I'll just let you take the wheel and just run with it.
Well, we'll fast forward.
Yeah.
And we will fast forward to what? 4 weeks ago, maybe? I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
You would think I'd have the date etched in stone. But I killed my first buck in 16 or 17 years.
Right.
And killed my first buck on our farm here in Ohio that I've now had for 3 years. And that's, and it was a mature animal.
Absolutely.
That I actually patterned. Mm-hmm. And I had a pattern on three of the five deer that I considered shooters on the farm. We haven't seen the other two. We don't know what happened. But all three of these, what's interesting, I had all three of them in bow range. And those are different stories within themselves. But there was a lot of satisfaction in that. But totally. That's fast forward. And that's just the simple, that's what happened.
Yep.
But there's a big backstory.
Big backstory. Yeah.
And it kind of started, no, it didn't start, let me rephrase that. It you understood it when you asked me the question the day I killed, once I found the buck, we gave it an hour, I came back in and found the buck only 50 yards from where I shot it.
Yep.
And I got it and I called you. Mm-hmm. And you asked me, how did I feel?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to tell how I felt yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's where all this started for you.
Right, right.
That's where you really, you got my whole story.
Yeah, that's it. So now that we've got everyone on the hook.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
They're sitting thinking, what's so special about this? What in the world? Who
what
cares?
What do you mean? How did
so
you
he
feel?
Shot a buck.
He's elated. He shot a hitless buck, a mature
buck. He shot a hitless buck.
A great deer.
It's a 133 class buck. Who cares, right?
How did you feel? It's important.
Yes.
It's important. So
sure.
I guess Well, then, that's a fast-forward view.
Let's go back.
Back to 17 years ago.
Sure. I grew up hunting.
Yep.
You know, my dad took me hunting for squirrels when I was younger. Killed my first rabbit at 8 years old.
Yep.
With a 410.
Oh, I love it.
And my mom got so mad. It was at our back door into our garden. Oh, she was about to kill my dad. But we didn't have deer back then because keep in mind, in the at least in West Virginia where I grew up, I was born in 64, and this would have been, you know, in the 70s or so forth. There was no deer, or very few deer.
Right. It
was, I basically lived near the woods, and I played in the woods all my life. I went hunting for squirrel hunting and all these things all the time. And my first deer I saw in the wild, I was 18 years old.
Wow.
18 years old.
Incredible.
Now, fast forward to, you know, 20, 30 years later, my dad had to put fences around his garden because they were eating up his vegetation.
Yeah.
So things changed. So Certainly. So I didn't grow up deer hunting, but I grew up hunting and loving the outdoors. Mm-hmm. So I bought a farm back in, I believe it was 99, and I absolutely loved my farm. And it had a great creek in front of it that had bass in it because it was it fed a lake and they spawned up in my creek, and I got into bass fishing then. But I was really, really into deer hunting there, really big time. And I would watch all the videos, Night and Hail and Primos and Realtree.
Yeah. And the good old days.
Oh, yeah. I watched
VHS.
Them all. VHS tapes.
Oh, definitely.
And I remember back then, I don't know about now exactly, but like North American Whitetail, for example, they didn't really have any issues through the winters. They only started their issues up in the summer. And I just wait till all the magazines came out. And I read them all.
Right.
And so I loved deer hunting. And for the 3 or 4 years that I owned the farm, it was my passion. Mm-hmm. Hunted a lot and killed a few nice deer and just had a blast. And, you know, it was all about the kill.
I just
loved to go out and kill the deer.
Yeah.
And it thoroughly enjoyed it. Well, without going into detail, Matt, I had to sell the farm.
Yeah.
I had to sell it. You know, family situations, we had to sell the farm. And I was devastated because I didn't want to sell the farm.
Yeah.
You know, I had to sell the farm. And so I put my guns up, my bows up in the attic. I don't even think I cleaned them. Didn't put them in the attic. Excuse me. I put them in the safe because if they were in the attic, they would have like split apart and things with all the moisture and heat.
Yeah.
But you know the concept. I put them away.
They're away.
And I couldn't even think about hunting anymore. Because I was hurt. I was devastated. I didn't even look at a magazine. I had no desire to. It was like I lost a relative.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would hurt. It was so hurtful that I wanted nothing to do with hunting.
It was a anything that reminded you of hunting was like there was a knife in your back and it just twisted it.
It just twisted. And I had people offer to to take me hunting on their land.
Uh-huh.
I turned them all down because I just had no desire. I mean, my passion, and we talked about this, my passion, even with that farm, you know, at that time I was kind of into killing things, but I was still at that time into the habitat. And I really, the part I really enjoyed the most was trying to landscape the land, or whether it be planting food plots, or I remember I would go out and I would string baling twine along tree lines, like a fence line, to try to get deer to go around a certain way to go to my stand.
Sure.
So all these little things, that's the part I enjoyed. I enjoyed, Matt, I enjoyed the 365 days, or excuse me, the 364 days of working with the land, working with the habitat, not just the one day you killed the deer.
Yeah, definitely.
It was the 364 days that meant something to me.
Full ownership of
yes,
the land.
Because that was more important than the kill. Although I liked the kill at that time.
Sure.
But it was the 364 days of the work that got to the kill.
Yeah.
If someone asked me to go hunting with them on their land, it number one, it brought back memories of I don't have my farm anymore, and it just bothered me.
Yeah.
And second of all, I had no desire, zero desire, to go sit in a stand that someone else put there, that they did all the work, and all I'm there to do is wait for a deer to come by and shoot it.
That you don't have any previous history with, you don't know.
Not, yeah.
It just comes
That's
through
right.
and
yeah, no desire for that.
Picking it off.
And it's okay. Other people may enjoy that.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with that.
Sure.
It's just not what I want.
That just comes down to a personal preference.
Personal preference.
Right.
I'd rather spend 364 days doing that for somebody else.
Yeah, right.
Really,
I mean
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I get it.
And so, and then I, same thing with public land. Again, same thing is I'm not into killing so much that I just want to go sit in a stand and wait for a deer to come by and kill it. I want to have something to do with why that deer is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what you teach me and what all the podcasts teach and what we're doing with this land that I have now, my farm now here in southeastern Ohio. That's the enjoyment for me. So anyway, that's the backstory.
Yeah.
And then I literally did not pick up a shotgun, a rifle, or a bow for the purposes of hunting for 16 years.
Wow.
Didn't even clean my guns.
Like, that brings new meaning to dry spell.
Yeah, talking about a dry spell.
Yeah.
Gee whiz,
yeah.
I dried up.
Yeah.
And something else changed. Over that evolution, and I, you know, Matt, I don't really know if it was my kids, my family. You know, I at the same time that this farm was being sold, I ended up getting full custody of my children.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I don't mean to bring that up. Only because I tell you that because I really poured my heart and soul into my children.
Right.
And then had a wonderful wife that I married in 2005, several years later. And she had a beautiful daughter who's now my daughter. You know, I've helped raise her and I consider her my own as well. And then something else changed is dogs. It's really interesting.
Yeah,
how do you relate dogs to this? Because all dogs do is chase our deer around and scare them off.
How do they play a role in this?
How do they play a role? You know, when I grew up, again, remember, I grew up in the 70s. And you know, I was born in 64, so the 70s and early 80s. So my parents and my generation's parents, when you had dogs, they were either hunting dogs or dogs, they generally were out in a doghouse.
Yeah.
They stayed outside. They didn't live in the house. They weren't part of the family. Well, that's what dogs were to me. Well, my wife was the opposite. She had always had dogs that slept in her bed and lived with her, and they were part of the family. So when I married her, I inherited a dog.
Yep.
A dog that slept in my bed.
Right.
That slept on the couch. That was all. And I was like, if I was going to be married to this woman, I was going to live with the dog sleeping in my bed.
Sure.
I learned real quick that I better love this dog. And I did. I loved her dearly. She grew to be 19 years old. It was the oldest dog that our vet said he had ever treated.
Wow.
But anyway, we said she was a ghost for the last 10 years of her life. She died 10 years old. She was just a ghost. But anyway, that's another story. So we bought a German Shepherd. It was just the love of our lives, and he was part of our family. He went everywhere with us. He flew in the plane with me. He went to the grocery store with her. He was her baby, but he was our family. And then we had our daughter, got a dog, and his name was Opie, and he was just the love of our lives, and he's still alive.
Yep.
Hogan passed away. And then we've had three German Shepherds since, of which you've met two of them.
Yes.
And as you can tell, they truly are members of our family.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we joke that we like them better than our kids.
Right, right. To put it in perspective, you fixed me 2 eggs this morning, and then your wife fixed the dog's eggs, too.
Every morning, we fix the dog eggs.
Yeah.
With us. If we make eggs, the dogs get eggs.
They get eggs.
Now, we don't feed them a lot of table food because that's not – but they're just – eggs are fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And so – you're thinking, where's this going?
Yeah, wait, yeah. We stopped talking about hunting that dry spell and got into dogs and feeding them eggs.
Is this a hunting podcast or is this a, what is it, something CPA or whatever, the American Society for Protecting Animals?
Yeah, SCPA or something like that.
No, there is a story to this. So where I grew to just love these dogs like our own family, mm-hmm. They're animals.
Yeah.
And I kind of started transforming from wanting to kill something and watched every video on how to kill a deer and whatever to where I bought this farm 3 years ago. And I really struggled the first year on even whether I would hunt.
Right. You had the dry spell. Then you have a farm back in your possession, the ability to go and hunt. And before we started recording, you said, I had food plots planted on the property, but you didn't even know if you were going to hunt over them.
Correct.
They were openings and you planted them.
Just figured I needed to plant some food plots.
Right.
I wasn't going to hunt. I just wanted to plant. You have land, you better plant food plots, right?
Right. You had the resources, everything at your disposal.
Yes.
But it was a total mindset of, is this something that I want to go through with?
Correct.
And
that's where the dogs come in.
Yeah.
Because to me, the dogs, they're a four-legged animal. They're animals just like that deer is.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, if I go shoot a deer, it's like shooting my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And they're part of our family.
Right.
And so I really struggled with that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. I really, really did. In fact, the first year, I planted food plots, not knowing why I was even planting them. It's just the land was there. You plant food plots. Right. And, that's long before I got in touch with you guys and learned about all the other things we need to do other than just plant food plots.
Yep.
But I hunted one time. Mm-hmm. The whole entire season. I even had 3 redneck blinds on the farm and never hunted out of them one time.
Wow. Yeah.
I did sit in them a couple times and take pictures.
Observe and just watch.
To see what the deer were doing.
Yeah.
So I was enjoying that. And I was enjoying looking out in binoculars at my food plots and watching the deer.
Yeah.
I think I planted the plots more to watch the deer than ever just hunting them.
Watch deer do what deer do.
Do what deer do.
Be deer.
Because I always enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Always. So I made this transformation that wasn't on purpose. It wasn't a conscious thing.
Yeah.
And here I was. I had this land that I bought to build this bass pond, which I did. Mm-hmm. Didn't buy for deer hunting. And now I'm planting food plots to watch deer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hunted once with a muzzleloader, and I probably passed 4 deer that day. And I really struggled. I even talked to some people about it. It's I had hunter therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had another friend of mine that had bought a farm, a really good friend of mine. In fact, I hunted with him the first time I ever killed a deer when I was like 26 or 27. He was the person who took me hunting when I killed my first deer.
Yeah.
So he bought a farm about 6 months before I did, and he was all into the hunting and this and that. And he's like, hey, you know, and he knew I was a hunter.
Yeah.
But he didn't know that I had transformed. He knew me the old way.
Hunting days.
Yes. That's right. And so, you've been hunting on your farm? No. We've been hunting? No. He's like, what's wrong with you? I said, I don't know that I can kill a deer anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I don't know how I will feel.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. And now this bothers me still to this day. And it's okay if other people do, but for me.
This is, personal.
It's a personal thing. Yeah. When I see a deer, a dead deer in a picture, the tongue hanging out, it bothers me.
Yeah, yeah.
So the little things like that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
So even when I killed this deer and the few does I killed last year, I put the tongue back in.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to see that.
Sure.
So there's a little bit of me that that still doesn't like to kill something. And I know a lot of people are like that. But I really had some mental problems over this. I had to have deer therapy. So that was the frame of mind I was in. Mm-hmm. And then last year, I kind of got more into it. I started enjoying the process again of manipulating where the deer traveled, the food plots, the really into early successional habitat, mm-hmm. bedding areas, timber standard, all the things you have taught me. You guys have been really good, especially listening to your podcasts, and they've done a lot, and then the work that we've done. I'm really starting to truly enjoy that 364 days again.
Yeah.
The 364 days of working the habitat, all the things we're doing mm-hmm. to try to get a deer, and in this case, mature deer, because I'm only interested in shooting mature bucks. Mm-hmm. I'm not so much worried about the score. I'm really worried about the age.
Yeah.
I really have no desire to shoot anything less than 3.5, but I'd really prefer 4.5 and mm-hmm. 5.5 if possible. But I mean, if it's a really nice 3.5, that's fine. But, but I just have no desire, because that's the challenge.
Sure.
And so I enjoy the whole process of trying to manipulate, and I don't mean manipulate in a bad way, I mean in a good way.
Right.
Creating habitat, funnels, bedding areas, pinch points, all the things that you all preach mm-hmm. to try to get that mature animal within bow range.
Yep.
So here we are. And
so that rolled into,
that's the background.
Into this year of...
And by the way, last year, I didn't take a shot at a single deer.
And you...
I did kill a doe.
You did kill a doe.
Because I know I need to kill some does.
Right, right.
Just to at least maintain the... I don't really have an overpopulation
right.
here. But I want to maintain it. Just from...
Standpoint.
Yeah, just keep status quo. Mm-hmm.
So that rolled into really this year.
Mm-hmm.
And... coming into season, you had 5 deer
mm-hmm.
that you said, I'd be happy to take any of those
yes,
deer.
Absolutely, yes.
And 2
still
of
not sure if I, how I'd feel about it, though.
Right, right. Still not.
Still not out of that.
Right.
I still hadn't killed a... It. I struggled killing that doe.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, that wasn't as bad because I knew it needed to happen.
Yeah.
Because I do buy into the philosophy that you have to manage. I've always been a proponent, Matt, even before it was hip, on you need to shoot at least as many does as you do bucks. Because
right.
someone else isn't.
Right.
And so you need to at least keep the population mm-hmm. stable. Now, you can increase or decrease based on whether you need to increase or decrease the population. But regardless of that, if you go out and kill 5 bucks or someone else does, and you kill no does... You're skewing the balance. Now, I know a herd can be self, they say it can be self-correcting over time,
yep.
but I think it behooves me to, if there's a buck killed on my farm, I at least need to kill one doe.
Sure.
It's kind of at least a general
right.
philosophy.
Right.
Very simplistic. So I didn't really have a problem with that doe
mm-hmm.
because I knew it needed to happen because I had a couple friends. I don't let very many people hunt. But I have had a couple friends kill 2 bucks.
Yeah.
So we needed to kill a couple doves.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't bother me.
There was a reason and a purpose behind
it. A reason
it
and a purpose.
Beyond just, if you will, an entertainment enjoyment thing. There was
right.
a scientific...
There was a scientific reason.
Factual, biological reason to do so.
In fact, I went out purposefully to kill a doe.
Yeah.
I did not go out hunting.
Right.
I went out because... we biologically felt we needed to kill 10 does that year.
Yeah.
And there was no way it was going to get done unless I at least killed 1.
Yeah.
And we killed 9.
Yeah.
So, now, it was still an animal, and I still had sadness.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going through all the mental gymnastics over it.
Sure, sure. So then that...
And by the way, I'm not crazy.
No, you're not. You're not. Then we get into this year.
Yes.
There's the 5 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
2 ended up... After Velvet Shed, they
yeah, we don't
left.
Know where they
don't
went.
Know.
We don't know if they're dead, alive,
right.
whatever.
Mm-hmm. But then you've got 3 great deer,
mm-hmm.
Which you got in front of.
Yeah. Yes.
Multiple times and had opportunities
yeah.
at.
And this is part of the satisfying part, man.
Yeah.
And this is way more satisfying than the eventual kill that we
yep.
initially talked about at the beginning. I... really, really wanted to I don't want to go out and just randomly kill something. Mm-hmm. Again, I enjoy the process. So, yeah. So I really wanted to make sure that I wanted to, if I was going to kill one, mm-hmm. I wanted it out of respect for the animal as much as anything. I wanted to make sure that there was an effort and there was a lot of time involved and not necessarily a purpose, but there was a plan. It wasn't just me going out and randomly this buck came by and I shot it.
Right.
I wanted it to be because of all the hard work and that had been done that it meant something.
Definitely.
And so I worked diligently over between October and November trying to get a pattern on these three deer.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get a pattern. And I had many conversations with you, probably too many, because I kept telling you I don't want to be a high maintenance client. But we had some other reasons to talk on some other things, so it just we ended up talking a lot.
We talked a lot about strategy. And how these deer where are you catching these deer?
Yes.
What are they doing? Where do you think that they're bedding?
Yes.
When are you seeing them here?
Yes.
But in all reality, you put it all together and made the decisions of where you need to spend time hunting.
But you were my sounding board.
I was a sounding board.
Yeah. And you gave me some suggestions. You said, well, I don't think I'd hunt, or I do think I'd hunt there. Well, I do, you know.
Right.
Believe me, you played a big part in this. But, you know, do you mind if I tell the story about each one of them very briefly?
Go
but
ahead.
Then it'll lead to the final. So there was one buck called Short Tine 10.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually the one that I was the most interested in.
Yeah.
And now come to realize after that encounter with him, there was another buck called Tailbone that actually is the one that is my favorite.
Yeah.
But I didn't start seeing him as much and really how great he was until after my encounter with Short Tine. So anyway, I had a semi pattern on these three, but I started after the rut.
Mm-hmm.
It was I didn't hunt at all pre-rut, and
right.
I didn't hunt at all rut. I don't have as much interest hunting in the rut because it's a little bit more random than I like. And I was in South Carolina with family, and we had a lot of family events in October, so I didn't hunt for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So I missed the entire rut. So post-rut, I started getting a feeding pattern, and it started cooling down. And
we did get a cold spell.
Yes, there was a cold spell there. And this one deer called Short Tine 10, which we initially thought was a mature deer, but now we're not sure. It may be 3.5.
Right.
Just a really nice deer.
Yeah.
Well, I got a camera shot of him twice coming into one of our hidey hole food plots that we created just as a kill plot. And you helped me in that. We kind of figured out where we thought he was bedding based on the camera surveys. And he showed up twice at
daylight.
Like 4 o'clock.
Right.
And that had never happened before. And what's interesting is one of the days he showed up in the spot was 2 hours after I chainsawed a tree right in that very spot.
Mm-hmm. Exact same frame.
Literally the same frame.
Yeah. Of the picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So me chainsawing 2 hours earlier had zero effect on this deer.
Right.
He didn't care. Which is a total another podcast, by the way, about
deer
working a farm and conditioning.
Yeah.
But that's another story. So I was really excited and I talked to you and I decided I waited. Remember I waited a couple of days until the wind was perfect. Got up in this stand and literally at 3:30 here he came.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 24 yards. And I had 2 spots picked out, and I thought he was at my 30 yard. He came in so fast, and I had no idea it was him because it was too early.
Yeah.
He was early than he should be. I thought it was
caught
a doe. Out of the corner of my eye, I thought it was a doe, so I wasn't even really ready.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have my rangefinder ready, and it was him. And by the time I saw that it was him, it was too late for me to move. The only thing I could do was barely get my crossbow up.
Yeah.
And so I thought for sure he was 30 yards, and he was 24.
Yeah.
And because I'm 22 feet in the air, that's a pretty severe angle.
Right.
So that extra 5 or 6 yards makes probably a 4 or 5 inch difference on the deer. Ended up shooting the deer, fortunately, below the spine and above the leg into the fat, we think the fat. And it injured him. It actually knocked him over, but he ended up walking away. And we've seen him since, and he looks perfectly fine.
He looks very healthy.
Perfectly fine. So, first deer in my life I've ever shot at and not killed.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a devastated me. I literally almost cried for 2 days. And I'm not saying that like virtually crying, but I was devastated.
Right. Do you remember irritated
me, you. It remember me saying, I feel terrible. Mm-hmm. I feel rotten. I don't want to ever want to injure a deer. So here I am already playing mental gymnastics.
Yeah.
And I've now, in my mind, injured a deer. Yeah. And I was just devastated. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I care about taking short. I don't take long range shots. I don't take questionable shots. How could I have done this?
Mm-hmm.
Because I just didn't range it right. Well, so that, and I didn't hunt. If you remember, I didn't hunt for like a week.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know that I'm going to do this. I just can't do this.
Mini dry spell.
So now y'all know I'm really crazy. Give me some Xanax, right?
No, you're not crazy.
So you pep talked me and a couple other people did. You know, it's okay. It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. I'm like, still, though, I don't want to do this. So I got back out there, and I got – so my favorite deer, which is Tailbone, I had him patterned now.
Yeah.
So I was out in the woods, and I had this tree stand set up, and I had hunted it once, and I had a pattern on him, and here he came.
Mm-hmm.
Just as exactly as it was planned.
Yep.
In a morning hunt. Just so happened to be 24 yards. Now, I watched him walk. Now, here's the thing. When I set this tree stand, and I'll try to make this. I know I'm rambling a bit.
You're good.
When I put up this tree stand, I left a couple limbs laying under me.
Yeah.
So that to kind of silhouette. So right. I wouldn't be silhouetted. Kind
of break up the whole outline. And break up the figure of a guy sitting in a tree stand.
Right. Because there wasn't a lot of background. There were not any trees that had stuff behind them. So this was kind of a place where there was only straight trees. So that's the only way I could try to break up my silhouette.
Yeah.
So he came from, I saw him coming about 75 yards away, and here he was coming right at me. And so I carefully got the bow up, and then I put my scope on him. All right, now I'm not shooting a bow. I have a neck problem, and I can't shoot a bow anymore, so I'm shooting a crossbow. And so I had my scope on him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know was as he walked towards me, I was lowering the scope, lowering the scope, lowering the scope, lowering the scope, to where finally he turned broadside at 24 yards. I didn't realize that my arrow, or bolt in this case, was apparently sticking right at that limb, but my scope wasn't.
Yep.
Because the scope is a few inches above.
Sure.
And I didn't take my eye off the scope, so I didn't know it was. So I shot and heard this weird noise. I'm like, what the heck? And that deer at 24 yards looked at me, and I stayed virtually still, and he never saw me.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at me like, what's up there?
Yeah.
Sit there for a minute, and I'm like, why is this deer not moving? How could I miss this shot?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe he's just going to drop over. I heard a weird sound, but I couldn't miss that shot. He walked up, turned around, looked at me again, never saw me. And it, maybe 10 minutes later, he just moseyed on up through. And I couldn't crank my crossbow back up. But he never saw me. And I'm like, what happened? And then I looked at the limb. Mm-hmm. And it had a big mark on it. And I found my arrow shattered literally 3 feet from him. It just shattered in pieces. So I didn't even come close to hitting that deer. And if I would have, it wouldn't have hurt him any because the arrow shot. So I was devastated again, but not because I wounded an animal.
Right.
So then fast forward a week later, a deer we have limp ear. Now, this is a deer we saw last year, and we thought last year that he was an older deer on the downside. But he really had a great year, and he looked nice. We think he's 5.5 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
4.5 the youngest, but we think 5.5 at least. And he really had a nice, beautiful main eight frame with a one. It was a 9 because he had one kicker point. But had a great pattern on him, and he was one of my hit lists. Well, I knew he was in this one area we call the saddle, and you and I talked about it. And I hunted him one evening, and right, without going into too much detail, right at dark, right at the last 3 minutes of shooting light, I shot him at, I think, 37 yards or something.
Right.
And he went 50 yards. Now, that's the story of the kill. It's done.
That's it.
It's done. And then you asked me. What did you ask me?
I said, how does it feel? What does it feel like after a 16-17 year hiatus of not hunting or truly harvesting game minus the doe. What did it feel like to take that deer again, from and knowing that what you've done to the habitat?
Yeah,
because you haven't really touched on it, but you are a serious habitat manager. What did it feel like to take that animal?
And I can't remember at the time if you even knew this backstory. I don't think you did you?
I
don't remember.
I knew. Yeah, I did.
You knew that I had some struggles with killing a buck. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you were expecting, but here's what you got. I said, I'm not sad at all. I am so, I can't remember the word I used. Maybe it was satisfaction or, I don't even think that was the right word. I was so, I felt, I don't know, it's hard for me to find the word. I felt gratified. It's like, because it wasn't about killing Limpier. This was about 3 years of working tirelessly. And I mean tirelessly, because other than you helping me and so forth, pretty much all this habitat work I've done over the past 3 years, over 2,000 hours worth, I've done myself.
Yeah.
Planted all the food plots, done everything.
Mm-hmm.
And before you all arrived, I pretty much, you know, did it all.
Yep.
And I was so filled with joy that three things. I got three deer that I was patterning, all three that were still left on the farm. I was able to get all three of them within bow range.
Mm-hmm.
That was more satisfying than killing any of them.
Yeah.
That I was able to do that.
You had a goal.
A goal.
And you basically accomplished it with all three of the deer. Put yourself and put the deer in specific areas that allowed you to have an opportunity at harvesting them.
Yes. And the part of that is that if it wouldn't have been for all the work the 3 years before and the habitat work and a lot of the advice that you all had given me and so forth, I would never have been able to do that.
Right.
Because I'm going to be honest with you, I am not a good hunter.
Right.
I'm not a bad hunter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an average hunter. And I'm not one of these guys that I've never killed a 133 class animal in my life. This is my biggest deer ever.
Yeah.
Now, I expect on this farm to kill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 150s and above, you know, at some point, probably next year.
Yep.
But I am by no stretch of the imagination. I've killed, this is my fourth buck my entire life.
Yeah.
Over 30 years. I'm 54, but I've only been hunting deer since I was 20, you know, 26. So, I mean, I've killed four in 30 years.
Yep.
So I'm not Mr. Deer Hunter. But I was able, through just doing the right thing, doing what I was told, doing my scent control, you know my regiment, doing exactly what you all say on your podcast and others have said, never hunt a stand unless the wind is perfect. And something that really helped me, especially over the past 6 weeks, and I don't mean to keep saying you guys, but I listened to your all's podcasts on hunting after the rut about pinch points and they're going back to the food, but hunt the pinch points and so forth. I really took that to heart. And two of the three of these that I got in bow range were in pinch points.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it really helped. So what I'm getting at is this. I got so much satisfaction out of being able to pattern three mature animals. As a novice hunter, being able to get them within bow range, even with the broken arrow, even with the miss of short time, but just the process of that. And knowing that all the hard work paid off.
Yep.
And so I was filled with a great satisfaction of knowing that this was 364 days over three times. So it would be 900 and some days for that one moment, and that was the best way to honor that animal. And so I did not feel sad. I was shocked. I thought I would be devastated.
Yeah.
But I felt wonderful.
That's awesome.
Which is the total opposite of what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, if I would have just gone somewhere to someone else's farm and killed a buck, even a better buck.
Right.
I think I would have been extremely sad.
Mm-hmm.
But not this one.
Not this one.
No.
And not the ones to come that are going to
come on
this property, come off
not
this property by your hand.
Yeah. That's right.
And that's the crazy thing. So, you know, we got to wrap up, but that's the powerfulness of the story, the powerfulness of the connection with what you're doing with the land, working it, and understanding the impact. It can change, I don't want to say, it can change hearts, but it can change mindsets and perspectives.
Yes.
And allow you to understand things
yes.
in a deeper way.
That's right.
And that's why as hunters, we're not just hunters. Like we're more than that. And I think we need to understand that and portray that better.
That's right.
You're an
that's
animal
right.
lover. I'm an animal
lover. Oh, absolutely.
Lover.
But you know what? But that's why I'm not sad about this. Because you and I were talking about something today. It had nothing to do with this, but
right.
it brings a... We said that we're leaving the land better than it, that we got it.
Yeah.
That we're making it better than what we started at. Now, we may not make it perfect.
Sure.
But we're making it better than we found it.
Yep.
And so when you think about that, that... That's why this is so satisfying, because quite frankly, the work that the QDMA and you guys and all, you know, all the habitat, whether it be, you know, returning our lands to more native vegetation versus invasive, whether it's old field management or early successional management or timber stand improvement, all the things that we should all be doing as land stewards. It's helping all the land, all the animals. It's helping the turkeys. It's helping the deer. It's helping the rabbits. It's even helping the coyotes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not anti-coyote.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people are, and that's okay, but I'm not. I think they have a role.
Yep.
They need to make a living too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if you have your land in balance and your habitat in balance and you make the habitat or you help create the habitat in such a way that it improves all wildlife, then that respect for the wildlife and that respect for the animal and that respect for the deer, it's more than just killing it.
Yes.
Now, it's okay if someone just wants to go kill a deer.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
But I can't do that.
Sure.
It has to be the whole package. Okay. I have to be improving more than I'm killing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm making the life of 50 deer or 75 deer or hundreds of turkeys or whatever, way better.
Yes.
And so the one deer is just the culmination or the icing on the cake for improving the overall habitat and leaving it better than we found it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I challenge everyone listening to think about your perspective, your thought process, why you do what you do, and where you're at. Not to say that if you are a guy who goes out and harvests a deer, doesn't have history with it, or doesn't, you know, manage the habitat, that you're wrong. Not at all. Not ever. But just think about your history with hunting and how you've developed and you've changed your mindset. Just to know where you're at and where you've come from, because I guarantee someone has had a transition in their line of thinking somewhere along the line. So where are you at? Consider it, ponder it. I hope you find this podcast intriguing, interesting, thought-provoking, and it does open your mind to different perspectives, different people in their stages of hunting, and, you know, just... understand people.
I just hope they were entertained because there's someone that's crazier than they are. Or maybe
it.
Schizophrenic. I don't know.
Love it. Well, thank you guys for listening. Truly do appreciate it. Get out there and do something in the habitat. That's all I got. It's late.
What do you say now,
right?
How do you follow that?
we had a good day. We had a long day working the property, but man, it's good to do a podcast with you. We appreciate everyone.
Thanks for
listening.
Having me.
Absolutely, you bet. We'll see you guys.